Welcome to the Beer Driven Devs podcast, where your hosts, Matt Goldman and Liam Elliott, share their experiences and passion for technology, software, and of course, beer. So be sure to grab yourselves a cold one and join them for this week's chat.
You've been watching the cricket, or are you not really a cricket fan?
No? I don't really like cricket. No.
Yeah, okay, fair enough.
You can't threaten to kick me out for that because they kicked me out of the UK for that.
Yeah, well, that's right. But I mean, if you watch how the Poms are doing at the moment, you're not missing a lot.
Fair enough.
Yes. It's been a while, Matt. It's been a long while.
It has, yeah. It has, hasn't it? Yeah, feels like it.
And a long while, not since we just recorded last, but also a long while since we were down in Melbourne.
Yeah, it's like, was it 3 weeks?
Yeah, it feels like it. It feels longer than that, but it must be about 3 weeks.
Yeah, and it's interesting. I was thinking that we're obviously going to talk this evening about our time in Melbourne. And I was thinking, it's funny, it's been so long, but we were so good and in control. We got so ahead of the curve that we just had enough episodes backed up that we didn't have to do this. And now, of course, we're falling back into our old habits.
That's right. And we are pushing our limits because we're on the Sunday just before we're about to need to release this, so we're definitely going to be biding our time here.
Yeah, I blame myself.
No, it's a bit of both of us. I've just been flat out too. Yesterday I graded at jiu-jitsu, so.
Oh, how'd that go?
Yeah, it was good. It was an interesting experience, but yeah, where we are, it's just, last couple of weeks has just been quite a solid mental burden, just trying to make sure I had everything perfected.
Yeah.
So that's where I've been spending a lot of my time at the moment. But that's now done, so back to normal, I guess.
Yeah. Did you pass your grading?
I did. So now I've finally got myself a blue belt. It's only taken a couple of years, but finally got to there.
Congratulations.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks. Apparently all that means now is that everyone wants to do wrist locks on me.
Right.
Yeah. So we'll see how it goes.
Yeah.
How's your week been?
The week has been busy. Yeah, it's I'm a bit under the weather today, as I said. I was down in Sydney the other day and I picked something up and I'm just struggling to get over it.
Yeah, so fair enough.
Last week was good though. On Friday night last week we took the girls down to see the Matildas. They played in Gosford. They played New Zealand.
Oh, did they? Oh, yeah. Awesome.
So that was good. Bit of a bloodbath.
Yeah.
5-0. Yeah.
Oh, shame.
Oh, no, as in we won 5-0.
Oh, we won 5-0. Fair enough. Yeah. I was going to say, because we've been pretty consistent recently. It's funny, since the World Cup, even after the World Cup, I remember hearing a stat that, like, for I think it was five or six home games thereafter, the Matildas had no trouble selling out a stadium, like some of the biggest stadiums here in Australia.
Yeah.
If you think about any other sporting team in Australia, international or otherwise, no one could consistently say that.
No. That's right. Well, they kind of became national heroes, and they've kept that momentum as well. This game. So this is at the Polytech Stadium in Gosford. It's not, it's not one of the nation's biggest stadiums. I think it's 20,000, something like that.
Okay.
But it sold out in 3 minutes.
I mean, they have no trouble selling out 70,000 seats, 60,000 seats.
Exactly.
Which is awesome. I think it's amazing for women's sport.
Yeah, it's amazing. Yeah.
Anyway, so before we get too carried away, and I know you're not feeling great, I'm ready for bed, and it's only 7 o'clock. Do you want to say if we can refresh our memories about Melbourne a couple of weeks back?
Yeah, so I'm actually just going to pull up the website and why don't we have a look at the agenda?
Yeah, I've got that in front of me.
Oh, okay. Yeah, me too. Yeah, so there was some interesting talks and speakers and what looked like some really, really amazing workshops actually as well.
I know. It's a shame. I get this fear of missing out, of FOMO, of missing the talks.
Mm.
And I don't want to do the workshops, but at the same time, the talks are recorded, so you can kind of come back to those.
That's true.
But then this year they also had two pre-conference workshops, didn't they?
They did, yeah. Yeah, that's right.
So I'm just looking here. Architecture as a Collective Practice, a role-playing simulation.
Mm.
And that was Diana. And then on the same page, Event Storming for Understanding Process and Systems Together by Paul. I think that would have been a really worthwhile one to go to.
Yeah, that would have been. So Paul actually did a workshop on the afternoon as well, which was the Baking Domain Concepts into Code, hands-on.
Yes.
But also the one in the morning, polarity mapping.
Yeah, I saw that one. But I was disappointed with the talks I saw otherwise. I mean, I would have much rather to see that polarity mapping one, but I got dragged along to the talks that were in conflict and, wasn't overly interested in those ones.
Well, I don't really know what to say. I mean, I'm gobsmacked because I thought the changing the engine mid-flight, a startup data pivot was
astounding. No, that was an astounding one. And I'd love to have Susan back on the show at some point. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the one straight after the keynote, morning tea keynote.
Oh, yeah. Well, whatever. Yeah. Skip that one.
Okay. So I guess let's stop being a bit too vague about this now, right? So we've quickly spoken about the workshops, which neither of us really did, so can't really talk too much about that. But the morning, obviously, as most conferences, a bit of networking to start with. I thought it was great to meet some people, some old familiar faces.
And of course, Pavel.
And Pavel too, yeah. So it was great to see Pavel there. Some new faces, new connections. It's always good fun. I mean, I personally really dislike networking events, but
oh, really?
I just hate it. It's just, you feel like you have to make small talk and it's, I don't know. It's one of those things I don't really enjoy, but no, I definitely enjoyed that. The morning coffees, intro and welcome, they call it. I think, yeah.
Or, yeah.
But I think I'd rather
make big talk next time instead.
Yeah. Or maybe. Well, we'll try. But no, I went from there into the keynote from Linda McGiver, The Art of Being Difficult.
Yeah.
What do you think of that one?
Well, I should probably, well, okay. So I'll give you the quick answer. I loved it so much that I literally bought her book at the end of the talk. Yeah.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah. But I also spoke to her the night before as well. So I had a bit more context.
Yep.
So I was kind of really looking forward to it. I thought it was a fantastic talk. It was exactly what we all need to hear right now. It's all about being bold and not, so it's not about being difficult for difficulty's sake, you know, not just being a dick like me, right?
Yep.
It's challenging the status quo, not just accepting things, challenging the defaults, but it's, you know, very much what we need to hear right now. And it's kind of where I think AdaComp stands out as well as a conference. I mean, as I said, you know, like there's lots of tech conferences and we enjoy them all, but we are very good as a profession at arranging opportunities to pat ourselves on the back.
Yes.
And I think the tech conferences that we go to, it's people showing demos, teaching something, showing something cool that they built, and they're always fun and you always see something cool. But this one's more about deep thinking. It's really about thinking about what we're doing more than the technical aspect. And certainly there's some really deep technical content as well.
Mm-hmm.
But it's more about thinking about what we're doing.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's really what that talk was all about. And especially now with everyone getting swept up in like AI, obviously AI is the talk of 2025, so you know it came up a lot in the conference.
Yep.
But you know, like the keynote really was all about don't just go along with it, you know. If something's wrong, say it's wrong, call it out.
Yeah No,
I obviously didn't articulate that anywhere near as beautifully as Linda did.
No, and I think we'll keep an eye out for when the videos are released, and we'll make sure we do link to them on LinkedIn as they come out. But no, I found the same, and I thought Linda's, what's the word, I guess basically exactly as you've said it there, right? You know, let's not just accept the status quo. It's not just necessarily being difficult. It's just knowing when to stand up and to actually speak your mind at the right time.
Yeah, exactly. You
know, yeah. So, okay. So then earlier on, I was alluding to what was after morning tea.
Yeah.
The talk after morning tea. Speaker that you're quite familiar with.
I have heard that speaker before, yes.
Yeah. Buying engagement, not selling solutions. A quest to revitalize Australia's first digital hospital. This was a talk by none other than yourself.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So, I mean, I could ask you to comment on it if you want, or, you know, I guess I can offer my thoughts, my completely unbiased, unprejudiced thoughts.
Yeah, that's right. Well, look, let me put it this way. It's a story that's 10 years in the making.
Yeah.
And it's a story that I've been wanting to tell for 10 years, and the right opportunity hasn't come up. And when I saw the topic of AdaConf this year was change, I kind of thought that's, you know, the right time to tell this story.
Mm-hmm.
So I submitted the abstract. Sorry.
No, I was agreeing. Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I submitted the abstract and it was accepted, and I was pretty pleased about that. But because it was a very personal story, and it has been such a long time that I've been wanting to tell that story, I don't think I ever felt that I would ever do it justice. And I didn't. Like, you know, I mean, there was a lot, even in the abstract, that I didn't manage to squeeze in. I didn't get cut off at the end this time. I did get the warning from Gretchen. So Gretchen was the MC. I did get the warning, and she didn't cut me off, but she did hurry me along at the end. And there was time for even a question that got squeezed in. So I wasn't that bad. But yeah, I didn't cover everything. But in spite of that, I'm pleased I got to tell the story. And, you know, I don't think I did it justice, and I don't think I ever would be able to, but I think I did well enough in the time that I had.
Yeah. Oh, look, from a from an audience member's perspective, a couple of points there. One, honestly, it did not feel rushed.
Mm.
Like, it didn't feel like you were rushing. Two, because we don't have the same knowledge and background and history of that project,
yeah,
we don't know what you missed. So it didn't feel like it was missing anything.
Yeah. Yeah.
And look, what I, there was a few things I really actually honestly did like about this. And I'm not just saying that because you know, you're paying my bills, you know, my editing fees, but I liked.
I thought you were paying mine.
Oh, shit. Yeah. Got to figure that one out. Now, I liked the narrative of the talk and the, you know, it had the story flow and you went from the beginning and all the problems that were there. And as it was going through, I was trying to sit there and trying to figure out how is this tying into change? Where is the change? How does that tie in with the rest of the conference topic? But then it was what, about 20 minutes, 15 minutes to the end where you start talking about that change management aspect.
Mm.
And, you know, you could kind of, that's when the light bulb goes off and you could really see, okay, yes, now I get where you're going with this. And it's not just, here's a story and this is the experience I had.
Yeah.
And I thought it was extremely well done. The other thing that was pretty cool, and you obviously picked up on this yourself, was, I'm trying to remember the exact anecdote, but the way that you were able to use ideas from Linda's keynote there was overlap in her ideas and in your talk too.
Yeah.
All right. You were able to sit there and just go, well, as Linda was saying, and yes. it was as if you guys, and I mentioned this to Sunil too, it's similar things happened last year.
Yeah.
Right. Without knowing what every single person is exact, like without knowing every single person's exact talk, there was a way that somehow they managed to get the talks to be to have a flow between them.
Yeah.
So that you could actually bounce back and go, oh yeah, remember when so-and-so was talking about this earlier? This is where that actually happened, or this was how that, you know, how we navigated that situation.
Yeah. I think
that was pretty cool.
Yeah. I think they plan it very well. Like, it's very clever and they must be thinking about this stuff. I mean, obviously I did speak to Linda the night before and I didn't know what was going to be in her talk.
Yeah.
She didn't know what was going to be in mine either, but she knew, I did tell her a bit about it, but yeah, I mean, obviously she was talking about digital hospitals and that kind of stuff. That was a bit on the nose, but even more, some of the more abstract concepts that I furiously scribbled down during her talk and then made a point of calling out to in mine, because there were some things that tied directly.
Yeah.
But it's funny because the main message and main takeaway of mine was almost, it depends on your perspective, but almost the opposite of Linda's, right? Because while hers was about being difficult, mine was about being easy. But then if you think about it, mine's about being difficult to the right people and easy to the right people.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
So, and then again, like just looking at what came next and how they planned it. If you look at the next two talks after mine leading up to the lunch break, they tie that flow, because the next one is literally about narrative. And then the one after that is about change in practice.
Yeah.
So it was done really well. I'll just one last thing that I'll say about my talk, because I'm quite pleased with myself, even if nobody picked up on it, although some did. I of course managed to slip in a Superman joke at the end and close the talk with a Superman joke, but you wouldn't have noticed it because you haven't seen the movie.
I think maybe
three or four people chuckled.
Yeah.
But that was it.
Straight over my head. Again, I'll have to wait for the video to come out to see if I can pick up on that reference.
Well, you won't, because you still won't have seen the Superman movie.
We'll see how we go. So following yours was Rahul with his, as you said, architecture as narrative.
Yeah.
Right. Which was, I guess, taking more of a storytelling aspect of navigating that architectural story.
Yeah. You know what's funny is, you know what you're saying about mine, that it was about halfway through that you kind of got it and saw where I was going with it.
Yep.
With his, it was more extreme for me. Like I kind of, every slide and everything that he showed, I was sort of thinking, because it was only a lightning talk, that was 15 minutes long. And everything he was showing, I was like, yep, that absolutely makes sense, but where are you going with this? And it was literally his last slide that everything fell into place, and I was like, wow, okay, I get it.
Yeah. Can you remind me what that last slide was?
So the last slide was literally, so everything leading up to that, it was kind of, so obviously he was showing his architecture diagrams and how he did those. And it was some real insight into how you kind of build these diagrams and how you architect these things. And it was in the last slide that it was literally the last slide where he turned it into a narrative and there was a story that flowed through it.
Yep. That's right. Yep. Yep.
So yeah, it was quite a powerful finish.
Yeah.
But yes, now, like lightning talk. And I think, in fact, there was two lightning talk that day, and yes. I definitely got the feeling that both of them were adapted from longer talks. And you can see how they would definitely flourish as much longer talks.
No, absolutely.
But yes, and then into changing the engine mid-flight, a startup data pivot, and of course there was a moment right near the start where you turned around and looked at me, and we were both laughing at the.
Yes, look, I think, in my opinion, I mean, okay, second to your talk, I think this was the best one out there, one of the day. I actually really, really enjoyed this one, Susan's talk.
Yeah, I did as well. I thought it was fantastic. Yeah,
and And that point you were talking about was, I think, was it the episode we released just before AdaConf or two before that, I think?
Yeah.
Was the discussion around SQL, no SQL, and
it's about SQL being the wrong default. Yeah. SQL being the wrong default.
Yeah, exactly. And about making decisions and making sure that we're deciding the right technology for the problem at hand.
Yeah.
And as you just said there, Susan's talk, that was exactly one of the architectural decisions that she had to...
That was the architectural decision that her and her team were contending with. But I think the thing we were laughing at is that how often we talk about clean architecture or anything like that, and how people say, oh, you can really easily change your database. And we always say, but no one ever does. And I think I said in that episode that I personally always find that the weakest argument. Yeah. And of course, literally one of our opening slides or comments was about exactly that, because that's what they did, was they changed the database. Well, they ended up not changing the database.
That was the decision, was do we change the database or not?
Yeah.
Right. But no, they just re-architected the way that to ruin the story, they re-architected their data model rather than the...
Just to elaborate on that, when we talked about SQL versus NoSQL, what we said was that, like, literally this is what we spoke about in the episode, right? Was we said that if you pick a SQL database, you're picking it because you get certain constraints and you get certain guarantees, right?
Yep.
But then you make certain compromises, right? And if you switch to NoSQL, you're just changing what challenges you're facing. And, what we said was that it's just a question of trade-off and compromise. And we actually tied it back to AdaConf last year with the internal developer platform talk from Atlassian.
Yes.
And we're talking about, it's the same thing when they were talking about microservices versus monoliths.
Yes.
And it's the same thing. It's like you either choose, you've got problems, you either choose, do you want to solve these problems in code and these with your architecture, or do you want to solve these with your architecture and these in code?
Yep.
And, with SQL, you, of course, have your strongly enforced relationships and referential integrity and so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
But then we spoke on our episode about, how often do you have a DBA building rules into your database that enforce that and everything else that we said, as software developers, we often build those rules into our domain models and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
But the main point that we were making was that if you choose to go with NoSQL and you're choosing to have the flexibility that gives you, if your software needs those rules, you have to be responsible for those rules somewhere else.
They have to
really
live somewhere.
It's really interesting how she said that, what the team did was they did the right thing, which was that they built very quickly and they rapidly built their prototype and their V1, and they learned that they didn't know enough about the technology to build their data model on it on the way that it needed to be built.
Not just that. It wasn't the technology. It was also they didn't understand their customers' needs.
That's true. Well, I mean, their customers' needs weren't finished being defined even.
Exactly. So, yeah.
But what she said was that the turning point was when they brought in someone who was an expert in that particular type of database technology who really helped them understand and solve their problems.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the points that I made there too, is because the decision she made or they had to make was they're on a Cosmos DB.
It wasn't Cosmos, it was Dynamo.
Oh, sorry, Dynamo.
Because it's AWS. That's right,
they're in AWS, yeah. It was a Dynamo DB. They were hitting some restrictions and some limits there. There was half the team or a good chunk of the team were saying, we need to transition to an SQL database to handle all of our referential integrity, because basically their domain model needed to change.
Yeah.
Right. The domain model, because the clients, the customers' requirements changed, or they understood their customers better, which meant that their domain model needed to change. And so the team was saying, well, we need to change our data store.
Yeah.
Whereas she was pushing back, and then they managed to find someone, an external expert in Cosmos DB, that was able to rejig their data model to align better with the domain model for that data store.
Yeah.
I think that's a quick summary of that whole scenario. But that comes back to sort of one of the points I was making was, I guess, your technical expertise on your team also needs to be taken into account when choosing the technology you use.
Yeah.
So just because, I guess in this case, they found someone where the technology and the expertise aligned. But I think the argument still there is, if they didn't have that person to provide that level of expertise, then I guess perhaps maybe changing technologies would have been more appropriate because it aligned better with their team. But now they have someone on their team that can actually handle that technology or can maximize their use of that technology. It becomes, I guess, again, a more appropriate choice.
Well, yes and no. I mean, I think we're going to invite Susan on so we can talk about this more with her, hopefully.
Oh, hopefully she'll join us. Love to talk to her about this yet.
So I won't challenge what you just said there, because let's wait till we speak to her. But one thing I will say about this talk in general, though, was because, I mean, everything that we're talking about is really the context. There was so much more depth.
Yes.
And Brett, in what she spoke about, that this provided the setting for. And the comment that I made to Liam was that she basically articulated in 45 minutes everything that we've been trying to say over the past 2 years of this podcast.
Yeah. Yep. I think that nails it there.
Yeah. So we'll get her on, and then that will be it for the Bedroom Devs podcast.
look, it might be able to buy us a break.
We'll see. I could have used the break today, to be honest.
Yeah. I know. Anyway, it's not stopping you from drinking that scotch. This
is what's getting me through.
Yeah.
It's medicinal.
Okay. And then, so lunch, obviously, then.
Yeah.
Which was, it was a good lunch, I thought. I enjoyed the food.
Yeah, it was great. Yeah.
And then straight from lunch into Fadila's talk on measuring change.
Yeah. Now, obviously, I loved this one.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yeah, I loved this one. And what's interesting about this was, of course, that a major, not a long part, but a major important part of my talk was about exactly this.
Yep.
Change. So again, just think about how they planned this, right? So in my talk, in fact, actually, I don't know if they knew about this, because I don't know if it was in the abstract, but one thing I mentioned in mine was about how I conducted an experiment.
Yes.
Because I wanted to gather metrics to support what I was saying. And it was fantastic. I mean, we did some before and after, and we really saw some value in the change there. And then, of course, Fadila came along and she delivered her whole talk on essentially the scientific method.
Yep. Yeah. And which is great. And that was her first talk too, she said.
Yeah.
I thought she did really well up there.
And she's Atlassian, is that right?
I think so. I think so. Yes. Yep. Senior software engineer at Atlassian.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, first talk, it was fantastic. It was really good. So she was talking about, I'm trying to remember, was it Bitbucket? Was that or was it Confluence? It was one of the Atlassian products, but she was effectively talking about A/B testing and about how they measured conversion between offering a free trial and letting people pay right away.
Yes.
And yeah, she was talking about how they measured it and how they tested it and how they kind of compared the results and so on and so forth. Now, there was something that I wanted to follow up and ask her about, which was, of course, well, you know, what about the longer tail? Because, you know, yes, your results prove that people convert more within this 2-week window,
yep.
right? But then what about after that?
Yeah.
So, you know, you don't know what the longer term is, but I mean, even so, you know, from a revenue flow perspective, you want to convert people in that 2 weeks anyway. Well, but
Yeah, no, I was just thinking, like, for that, in that scenario, I don't know if it would be possible to see what that long tail looks like.
Well, no, I don't know. Maybe I think it would. And I think it'd be interesting to kind of see what that curve looks like over time as well. But anyway, that's by the by. I mean, that particular experiment is an example. And, you know, I especially love the calculators that she showed and all that sort of stuff. Essentially, the talk was about the scientific method and applying the scientific method to change.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Yeah, I really did enjoy that one.
And then, so then Martin was there for the second lightning talk.
Yeah.
Joy-driven development.
Yeah. So this was another one. Now, it's interesting with this because I think unless I'm mistaken, and correct me if I'm wrong, I think this is the first time he delivered this as well. Is that right?
I think it could have been, or it might be the first time he's delivered it in this cut down version.
Maybe. But that was the thing, is what I was going to say was this is another one where I think it deserved longer.
Yeah.
And another one that would have really flourished with a longer, you know, longer time. And I really absolutely loved the concept and loved, you know, the point that he was making. And interestingly, I think also the same thing where he kind of built up to a bit and kind of, you know, had his big penny drop at the end.
Yeah. I'm just trying to think back now.
So he was talking about a case study, and it was when he was consulting and he went into a team, and basically, in short, the story was about a product that was slipping and it was falling behind. And the short version is that it was because the team were unhappy and miserable because, you know, no one was listening to them. They weren't listening to each other and everything else that you can imagine about a dysfunctional team.
Yeah.
And, you know, there wasn't any joy in what they were doing. And, you know, the solution wasn't to drop the product and pivot. Same as Susan, really. It's, you know, and I said I wasn't going to dive into that one. But the solution isn't to abandon what you're doing. It's to address the dysfunction.
Yeah. And so then just before afternoon...
By the way, sorry, just another one. So Martin, am I correct? Is my memory correct that Martin was actually the moderator of the panel discussion last year?
Yes, he was. Yeah. Same Martin. But this year,
To segue into panel discussions.
To segue into the panel discussions, do LLMs dream of digital transformation? Now, this was interesting because not only did their moderator actually, I think they were unwell on the day, couldn't make it. One other panelist couldn't make it.
That's right. Yeah.
So, you know, the amazing team there were able to pull together still at very short notice that full panel. And they had Lee from last year, who's amazing. We've still got to get him on and in discussions there. So hopefully in the new year, we'll be able to have a chat with Lee.
Yeah, that'd be good.
And I thought he did a great job of moderating that panel.
Yeah.
Just being able to really keep it going, keep the conversation going, keep the topics fresh. Like it was, yeah, I thought he did a really, really good job there.
Yeah, I thought he did too. And interestingly, just unless I'm mistaken, same thing happened last year as well. They had the moderator and the panelist not able to make it. Moderator and one panelist.
Was it? That's right. I think I vaguely recall now that Martin came on as a moderator at the last minute.
So you're right
because they threw Chris in as the panelist.
And it was also interesting talking to Sonal afterwards about how last year that caused a fair bit of panic and you wouldn't have noticed, like it all appeared to just go smoothly, you'd never know, but she was saying last year there was a bit of panic and this year they prepared for it and it all went smoothly, so she was much more relaxed this year.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. And I think it goes to show that, you know, they are learning as they're putting these on and they're only getting better.
Yeah, and I don't have my notes with me, but there was one particular comment that was made during that panel discussion I thought was amazing and I wrote it down and I can't remember what it was. Oh, yes, okay. So Matthew Gillard made a comment and it wasn't actually the comment he made. It was something that he hinted at and I followed up with him afterwards about it. So I think maybe there was some mention of blockchain and Web3 and about how AI is the latest trend and maybe it'll go that way. Yeah. And there was something that he said and I can't remember what it said, but it sparked something for me. And I went and asked him afterwards and he kind of said, yes, that's what he was getting at, but he didn't have time to mention it. And it was about, I think the real insight for me was about how AI is not the new blockchain and not the new Web3. It's the new IoT, right? And let me explain that. Because I thought that was just so on the nose, right? So
my memory must be, because I don't recall that.
I can't remember that wasn't the exact comment that he made. And I'll check my notes and I'll let you know. But I asked him about this, right? And what he was getting at here was that if you think about IoT, right? IoT came along and IoT was really, it was about hobbyists, makers, right?
Yep.
People just tinkering, making things. And then, of course, enterprise got hold of it and thought, this is going to be some big thing that we're going to monetize.
Yep.
And of course, everyone wanted to get in an IoT, and IoT was everywhere for a while. It wasn't as prolific as AI. But
no, but it's still there. I mean, my dishwasher's Wi-Fi enabled. Not that I've connected it up to anything, but it is.
But where he was going with that was that IoT kind of, you know, the world quickly realized that actually, yes, IoT really is the domain of tinkerers, hobbyists, and makers. And not to say that it's not going to be everywhere, because it already is, right? But it's not going to be some major enterprise thing that everyone's going to capitalize and cash in on. It's not a gold rush. And there are a few companies out there that are actually doing interesting enterprisey things with IoT and making money from it. But by and large, it's individuals. And what the point that he was making, the parallel that he was drawing with AI, is that right now everyone's trying to turn AI into a big enterprise thing and make money from it. But the people that are getting the most value out of it are individuals.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. And I think the big difference, let me backtrack a bit. I'm struggling to remember that part of the conversation. But as you're talking about it now, the thing that comes to mind is, and I've said it before and I'm sure I've heard a lot of other people say it before, but you know, blockchain, Web3 are solutions looking for products.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Whereas IoT and AI, I don't know if you could call them products looking for a solution, but they're definitely not a solution that is looking for a use case or a product out there.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. They deliver real value.
And I think if you look at it that way, I think that's where it really differentiates from that Web3. Maybe it's got the same hype as Web3, but definitely not. I think it does have more utility behind it.
I agree. And just to call out two of my favorite comments that were made during that panel discussion, which aren't necessarily related, but well, one of them is. So Donna said a couple of things, which I loved. One of them was when, again, Matthew was talking about how we're all, you know, people don't understand what AI is. They think it's Gen AI. They think it's sentient, but it's just next word prediction. Yeah. And Donna said, spicy autocomplete.
That's right. Yeah.
But then I think the thing that I furiously, frantically scribbled down that she said that wasn't related to that that, but it was in the context of something else. I was like, God, this is the analogy I've been looking for years. She was talking about, it was in the context of the discussion around prototypes, and because someone was talking about how AI is great for quick prototypes, and it is. We've both done it, and we both continue to do it. It's fantastic for that. And then saying, but the problem is that even, as we've spoken about on the podcast, right, even we as an industry, as professionals, as developers, have been struggling to get people to understand the concept of you build your prototype to as a proof of concept, then you start again, you throw it away, and you don't necessarily start away, throw it away, but you start again, right? You don't ship your prototype to production. We've been struggling to get people to understand that for years, and now AI's come along, and now everyone thinks that you can just vibe code an enterprise solution and make millions of dollars and ship it, and there are people learning some hard lessons there. What she said, which was, it's amazing. She said, if you ever see how they design a car, they make the first version out of clay.
Yes,
exactly. They make it out of clay. That's how they design the physical look and structure of the car. Obviously, that's not a car. You don't ship that. And that's how you need to think about your first version, your prototype. I was like, yes. So I wrote that down.
But that just reminds me of Zoolander.
Oh, yeah.
When he's designing that, when he's got the design for the school.
For ants?
Yeah. Are you sure the clay car's not a real car?
Yeah.
Yes. No, I really love that. And I thought that was a great, great analogy. But I don't know if, I don't know how we can translate that in our industry.
I think we can just tell that story.
Yeah.
And look, see how that goes.
I think it's a good metaphor to keep up our sleeves. I mean, I always say too, as a consultant in the software space, I like to use the analogy of kind of a bit of a, not in the same vein, but I always like to say, look, my job is to help to prevent the Homermobile from coming to existence.
To prevent the what?
The Homermobile from coming to existence.
Oh, the Homermobile. Yes.
I'm ruined! And that's where, the client comes to you and they want all the bells and whistles and they want everything else, right?
Yeah.
But you need someone with industry experience, someone that can stand on the outside and just go, you know what? That sounds pretty cool, but it's actually not a viable option. It's not useful. It takes away from the core competency of the product or whatever else it is.
Yeah.
Which, and that's what was lacking in that scenario. But yeah, I guess, I don't know if that's in the same vein, but that's the way I say it.
Yeah.
But no, look, and we've reached out to Donna too, and I'd love to have her on, especially for her takes on the open source world.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
she's definitely got spicy takes in that space.
Yeah,
to go with her spicy autocomplete.
Yeah
So reaching out to her, and hopefully we can get her on soon too.
That was a great panel discussion, and again, I guess there isn't really a hallway track with AdaCult because that's just not how it's structured. But there definitely is a pub track afterwards.
Yes.
And as you just mentioned, there was a lot of good follow-up discussions with Donna.
Absolutely.
And actually, the other panelists as well.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
The discussion continued into the evening. It was really good.
Yeah.
So then we had afternoon tea, and then we had the closing talk.
Mm-hmm.
So look, I don't know about you, but man, I'm still processing that. that was a whirlwind, and it really hit you in the face. And I'm still processing it. It was a lot to take in. It was very fast.
There was quite a lot of content in that last one.
Mm.
And I'm looking at the timings here, and that was apparently only 45 minutes. It did feel like it was a lot longer than that, just the amount of content.
Yeah.
And I guess not just the amount, but it was the breadth. Like I felt it went so many, it covered so much ground.
Yeah.
That, and especially at the end of the day, I think I was struggling at that point to comprehend the whole lot.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't. So Diana is a very accomplished speaker.
Yes.
So she obviously knows how to deal with the problem that I was talking about with my talk, right?
Yeah.
Which is, she knew how to weave in everything that she wanted to say, and she delivered every point that she wanted to deliver. And it was a lot to take in. And that's why, I absolutely struggled to comprehend the breadth of it. And as I said, I'm still processing it. And I think I'm kind of really looking forward to the recording of that. And I think it would be good to have the benefit of watching it with a pause button and a pen and paper.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. Absolutely. I think she's got a world of knowledge. But yeah, it's, I guess, the time, like the time difference between when we saw that and now, I'm still, like you said, still trying to comprehend it, trying to get my head around it all.
Yes. So look, I won't try and dissect that, and I won't try and dive into it. One thing I will mention though is I did catch up with her in the pub afterwards.
Yes.
And she mentioned that that one thing she did mention in her talk was that she put off learning JavaScript because she put off learning JavaScript for 10 years because she thought it was a fad. So I caught up with her in the pub and I said, JavaScript is, I still think JavaScript was a fad.
Yeah.
And in fact, we'll see how we go, but this is likely to be, if not the full topic of discussion for our next episode, but it will come up because I've got a blog post I'm about to push the button on that's a follow-up to our Has JavaScript Outstayed Its Welcome? I'm going off topic now, but
yeah,
I've got far coming to that where I'm no longer asking the question. I'm making the case for JavaScript's got to go, but that's another story.
Yes. Sorry, I'm just trying to process.
Yeah.
So that was, I guess, a whirlwind recap of AdaCom.
Yeah, and unfortunately this year we didn't do our Vox Pops like we did last time.
No, because for some reason my PA decided to book me a 9 a.m. flight out of Melbourne.
Yeah,
and by right. PA, I mean myself.
Yeah. I honestly just didn't have the energy, I think. Yeah.
So as it turned out, as I was in the cab on the way to the airport and I went to check in on my phone, it said that I could actually check in for an hour flight, an hour earlier.
Yeah.
So I ended up, I was out of there. Because I got there in enough time and yeah, I ended up leaving Melbourne by 8. So yeah, definitely not enough time.
That Friday would have been a long day.
No, it was the Saturday.
Oh, that's right. That Saturday would have been a long day.
Yeah. But no, that was that. And it feels, like I said, it just feels like so long ago.
It does, doesn't it? Yeah.
But actually, now that we've done that recap and looking at the topic of that second of the panel this year.
Yeah.
Do LLMs dream of digital transformation, right? And then the point you were making about, is AI a fad or is it enterprise ready or in whatnot? Kind of sounds like there's a good further panel discussion to be had around that space.
I think you might be right.
And we've floated this in the past, but, discussing specifically from a developer's perspective, right, what does the future look like for us?
Yes, it's an interesting question. Is there a future?
Is there a future? What does it look like? Exactly. I feel like that's a discussion that would extend well beyond just you and myself.
Yeah, the kind of thing we might like to perhaps get a panel to kick around and discuss.
Yeah.
Some kind of panel discussion.
Yeah, but I'm thinking, we'd need a bit of audience interaction too. I don't think it could be recorded, pre-recorded.
So something live, you think?
Yeah, why not? I reckon we could do something live.
So BDD live panel discussion.
Yeah, I like it.
What a great idea, Liam.
just spitballing ideas here. I don't know where that's come from.
off the top of your head, off the cuff here.
Off the cuff. I could lay claim to actually coming up with that idea, or I could go through my messages on my phone and suggest that maybe you might have seeded that idea in my head.
I don't know. I honestly don't know, and it doesn't matter because whichever way it was, it's our idea.
No, that's right. Roll. So I guess without being too, if that was cryptic in any way whatsoever, Matt and I had in talks, in discussions, trying to plan to see if there's any interest in doing a BDD live in the new year. And that topic of what does the future look like for developers in the world of AI or whatever catchy phrase my friendly LLM can come up with.
Yeah. Why don't we just say watch this space?
Yeah, but I think it'd be good to see if we can gauge some interest.
Yeah, okay. Don't watch this space.
Don't watch this space.
Comment on this space.
Yeah. We'll gauge some interest. We'll get some interesting panelists involved.
Yeah.
And people who have great opinions, varied opinions.
Yeah. I think we've got some interesting people in mind. I think, obviously we don't want to commit to people we haven't spoken to yet and, people we have that haven't confirmed, whatever. So, yeah, I mean, don't want to give too much away, obviously, but yes. I think it would be awesome. So
yeah,
it'd be good to. I think we're still figuring out the logistics, but it's going to be, I think, definitely an exclusive event with a very limited number of tickets.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll make those available as soon as we can.
Yeah, absolutely.
Excited for
and I think the way timing works out, we'll be looking towards February next year.
Yeah.
Plenty
of time to recover from Australia Day.
That's right. And to save the date.
Yeah. All right. Well, look, it was an interesting panel discussion and it was a fantastic Ada comp and I'm definitely looking forward to next year. I don't know if we got an answer to the question of whether LLMs dream of digital transformation, but I am dreaming of my bed and probably a ginger and lemon tea.
Sounds good.
Good segue.
I don't know about that. You've done better.
Yeah, true. Surely I've done worse.
No, I probably have. I don't know about you. Doesn't matter. But yeah. Matt, I think that's it for this episode of the Beer Driven Devs.
You forgot to say they're calling last orders, last drinks.
I did too. It's been that long.
Yeah.
So Matt, I think I've just heard them call for last drinks here. So that's it for this episode of the Beer Driven Devs. I'm Liam Elliott.
I'm Matt Goldman.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Sweet.
The Beer Driven Devs podcast is recorded and produced on Dharawal and Darkinjung land.
Pretty harsh what you just said whilst we're hitting record.
Don't know what you're talking about. I didn't say anything. I literally just joined the call.
Oh, yeah.